My name is Karis Parker, and as Pastor John mentioned, I've been interning with JK students this summer, and I've worked with the youth in the past as well. And this John Knox community has really become such a special place for me. I was actually baptized here when I was 3 years old, and while I grew up overseas in West Africa with my family, John Knox was always our home church. So I always felt connected to you, even from afar. But it's been an extra privilege to actually get to live here in Normandy Park with you all and do life with you over the last couple of years. So I'm really thankful for this chance to share a few thoughts on Psalm 125 as we continue through our summer series on the Psalms of Ascent. And I want to begin with a question. Do you remember where you were when you first realized that COVID-19 was no joke, that it was going to require us to make changes, and significant changes at that? I was in Jerusalem when I had my first COVID-19 moment. I'm currently attending Fuller Seminary, but I had arrived there in February to start a semester at a place called Jerusalem University College. And while I was there, things didn't quite go as expected. This going to Jerusalem had been a dream of mine, 10 years in the making. When I was 14 years old, my mom came up with a rather brilliant plan that if I went through confirmation class, did everything I needed to do, read the books, memorized the creeds, also did some things that I later found out she had added into the curriculum, like read through the entire Bible. She slid that one in there. I didn't ask any questions because she told me if I did everything, I could go with her on a short-term trip through Israel and Palestine. And so I was really excited. As you can imagine, I was very motivated with the purest intentions. And I did everything I needed to do, and I was confirmed. And I ended up on this trip with my mom. And I can still remember standing at the shore of the Sea of Galilee on my last day of that trip and deciding that one day I would figure out how to come back and study the land and the stories of the Bible that I had learned to love so much through that trip. That was the first time I really felt this sense of calling and passion for theology awoken in my own spirit. And so I knew that one day I had to come back. And so growing up over the years, the memories of Jerusalem, they really represented for me a time in life where I felt like I was doing what I loved. I felt peace and happiness. And as a kid, I always struggled physically with asthma and emotionally with anxiety. But when I was there, those things really didn't bother me. I felt like I was carefree and lighthearted and capable of learning the material. And the air did wonders for me. I could actually hike for once without my breathing becoming an issue. And I was always at the front of the pack, first up the mountain and ready to do it again. Basically, Jerusalem represented a place for me where I felt like I could be who I had always wanted to be. And the things in my life that I didn't like, those things were under control. And so naturally, when I found myself back there all these years later, finally there on my own to study for a semester abroad, I had certain expectations as to how this semester was going to go. And then COVID-19 hit. Suddenly, our campus was put on lockdown. There were police all over the streets checking that you were only on your way to the pharmacy or to get groceries. Those were the only two reasons you were allowed to leave your residency. All of our classes switched online, and all of the semester trips that we had been waiting for were canceled. Some of the students were required to go home by their sending schools, and others were pressured by their parents or loved ones to get home as soon as possible, because the U.S. State Department had issued a statement saying, if Americans don't return right away, our return cannot be guaranteed in the foreseeable future. And so at that time, I really didn't know what this whole thing was going to turn into. I didn't know if airports would be shut down indefinitely. I didn't know what was going to happen. Would I be able to get back? Or would I get stuck there? Or would leaving expose me to the virus? And so even though it's only a two-hour drive away with the country in lockdown, I never did make it back to the Sea of Galilee. And so instead, I stood on the roof of our campus building overlooking the city and seeing the mountains which surround Jerusalem. And as I looked at a place I had once associated with peace and health, a place where I had once always felt in control, I now felt very out of control and was asking God, what do I do now? Do I stay or do I go? How do I navigate the road ahead into very unknown terrain? Everything I had been planning for, been dreaming about, the trips, the friends I was supposed to meet up with, spending Easter in a vibrant, bustling Jerusalem, camping with Bedouins in the Jordanian wilderness, all of those things were taken away, and I was left with that disappointment that comes when our expectations are dashed. And I know that you all had your own plans and expectations that fell through as well. And so I want to try something here for just a minute. I want you to use your imagination and stand with me on this roof overlooking Jerusalem. Stand with me in the place where a decision has to be made between the familiar and the unknown. I'm here, concerned about COVID-19, trying to figure out if I should quite literally flee the city or not. And for you, it's probably something very different. Maybe there's someone you need to forgive, or there's a struggle in a relationship or at work or in just how you see your future. Whatever it is, recognize this place of decision. And if you scan down through the Hinnom Valley with me and up to the surrounding western hills, you would see a high ridge. And if we were to time travel back just a few thousand years or so, standing on this same roof, you might see another group of people journeying on that very ridge route. It's often referred to as the Patriarchal Highway. And they've come a long way. They're covered in dust and weary from their days of travel. And they each carry with them their own stories of trials and joys. But as they approach the city of Jerusalem, despite their weariness and whatever concerns they're carrying in their hearts, they're singing as they approach the city. And the song is about Mount Zion. And they're singing as so many have sung for generations. And as they get closer, we can just start to make out the words of their song. And it goes like this. Those who trust in the Lord are like Mount Zion, which cannot be moved but abides forever. As the mountains surround Jerusalem, so the Lord surrounds his people from this time on and forevermore. For the scepter of wickedness shall not rest on the land allotted to the righteous, so that the righteous might not stretch out their hands to do wrong. Do good, O Lord, to those who are good, and to those who are upright in their hearts. But those who turn aside to their own crooked ways, the Lord will lead away with evildoers. Peace be upon Israel. Psalm 125 deals with uncertainties, the things that shake us, and the prospect of being alone in our times of trouble, or the prospect of being led to do wrong in our times of trouble. This is a song that points us to a hope and a certainty that aren't human in origin. No, this is a song that expresses a hope and a certainty that come from God alone. And to illustrate this point, the psalmist compares those who trust in the Lord to Mount Zion. Now, for us Washingtonians, such imagery would probably bring to mind a mountain of Mount Rainier's proportions. Tall, mighty, and for those of us who aren't Thatcher Kelly, somewhat insurmountable. But Mount Zion is actually very different. The term Mount Zion originally referred to the lower eastern hill that David captured from the Jebusites and fortified as his capital city. And while Jerusalem would eventually expand into a much larger, greater city, the original mountain that bore this name, Mount Zion, was not a mighty mountain as we might picture it. No, this was more like a large hill. And on its own, it certainly did not offer very strategic views of the surrounding land, nor great protection from possible approaching enemies. As Pastor John mentioned a few weeks ago, David's choice of Jerusalem was more for tribal boundary reasons and trade route reasons, and less for military strategic reasons. Geographically, there were far more powerful and advantageous cities David could have chosen to be his main city, but he didn't. He chose Jerusalem. And later, his son Solomon would build the temple on the highest part of this eastern hill called Zion. But even with the addition of the temple, travelers and pilgrims would still find themselves at a higher elevation than this Mount Zion as they stood on the mountains surrounding Jerusalem, preparing to enter into the city. And so when the psalmist says that as the mountains surround Jerusalem, so the Lord surrounds his people, he's tapping into the geographical reality of their situation. The mountains that surround Jerusalem are, in a sense, the city's main defense. They're what isolate the city from approaching enemies. And so to trust in God like Mount Zion is not to be powerful, but it's to be vulnerable, dependent on God, like they were dependent on these mountains. This psalm isn't about a mighty people. It's about a mighty God. And Mount Zion would come to symbolize the hope of a very unlikely group of people who survived against all odds, not because of their own strength or even the strength of their city, but because God's presence was there in the temple and surrounding them as the mountains surround Jerusalem. And if you think about it, while this idea of mountains surrounding us, it is indeed protective, but it also means that from down on that lower eastern hill called Mount Zion, we might not as easily be able to see what's coming. And so to trust in a God that surrounds us might mean letting go of our desire to know and consequently control what's coming. The psalm then moves from these protective mountains to human behavior. And those who trust in the Lord, those who are like Mount Zion, are contrasted with those who take crooked paths. Now, throughout the Old Testament, this idea of not taking crooked paths, in another way it's phrased, not turning aside to the right hand or to the left, this is used to indicate righteousness and obedience. For example, in the book of Numbers, when Moses is leading the people up out of Egypt and into the Promised Land, he wants to take a route that will take him through the territory of Edom. And so he sends word to the king of Edom, asking for permission to pass through his land. And he says to him, "We will not go through any field or vineyard or drink water from any well. We will travel along the king's highway and not turn to the right or the left until we have passed through your territory." And so in this more literal example of the phrase, we see that Moses is assuring the king that the Israelites will do what they said they will do. They will not take advantage of the land. They will not take shortcuts. They will stay the course and pass through peacefully. And then in Deuteronomy 5, Moses says to the people concerning the law of the Lord, "You shall be careful, therefore, to do as the Lord your God has commanded you. You shall not turn aside to the right hand or to the left." In other words, you shall not walk in crooked ways. You shall not take matters into your own hands. To take crooked ways is really to trust that we know best. And in times of uncertainty, I think we're all at risk to want to dart off onto our own paths, paths that we believe will get us to our goal faster or help us avoid emotions and pain we'd rather not feel or protect us from whatever we think is coming, whatever we're afraid of. Actively trusting in God looks like remaining even when we want to flee, or maybe it looks like going when we'd rather stay. It looks like continuing to walk with God, continuing to trust in God even when we doubt, especially when we doubt. Abiding rather than going off on our own paths, even when we're not receiving the answers we thought we would get. It looks like putting down those things which we turn to before God, or the things that we cling to for comfort rather than God, and entering out into unknown terrain with our arms fully open and available to God. It might look like stepping out into a journey that we don't know the end of. And so it's a difficult thing to do. It's difficult to be vulnerable, to not know what's coming. I think we've all had those moments when we feel like we're standing at the precipice of a journey into the unknown. Maybe for you, it's the pandemic that continues to come to your mind. I know that if you're a student or a parent of one of those students, you're probably still processing the recent decision for all of school to be online this next fall. Or maybe it's you're struggling with this continued season of isolation from grandchildren or children or loved ones, and it's turning out to be a lot longer than you would have expected. Or maybe it's something else entirely, a new job or the lack of a job, the beginning of a relationship, or the end of one you thought was going somewhere. Maybe you're walking through a time of loss. You've lost someone dear to you, or you're dealing with an unexpected health issue. Or maybe the things you thought would happen in your life by now just haven't happened. And so you're left wondering, is this all there is? Our plans can so easily fall through. And we're left with the choice to walk with God into the unknown or to struggle to regain control and take our own crooked paths. I wonder if that's how the Israelites felt as they prepared to leave Egypt and journey into the wilderness, into very unknown terrain. At that time, at least land-wise, Egypt was the place to be. It was powerful, fertile, wealthy, the perfect place to host the greatest civilization at that time. And so I wonder if it crossed the Israelites' minds that it would sure be a lot easier to just take over Egypt and build their whole kingdom there rather than head out into much more difficult and hazardous land to people groups and geography and agriculture they were not familiar with. If their God was powerful enough to bring the plagues, why couldn't he finish the job and clear out the Egyptians? But instead, it's the Israelites who head out into the wilderness and on to a journey that's much longer and much more difficult than they had bargained for. Throughout the Bible, there's something about being in unknown terrain that builds trust and character. It's where God chooses to meet with his people in a very special way. Or perhaps another way of looking at it is that God is always ready to meet with us wherever we are, but it's when we're in times of discomfort, when we aren't in control, when our backup plans fall through and there's nothing to numb our fear or our pain with. Maybe it's in those times that we are more available to God, that we show up to a God who has always been there and always will be there. For some of us, being nudged in the direction of faith and called out into unknown terrain, it can feel like an intrusion. We become happy with the familiar and annoyed that God seems bent on growing our faith while drawing us out into these unknown situations. But even in this, God's protection is real and his guidance is real. Perhaps God has arranged these few minutes for us all to stand on this roof, looking out over the city to tell us that we are both vulnerable and protected. That trusting in our own strength will never bring the peace that we long for. That faith comes alive when we surrender control. From that desert where the Israelites were wandering for so long, going back to Egypt, a place that was familiar, probably did seem like a better option at times. But it was through their struggle and their journey with God, through the wilderness, across unknown terrain, that God formed them into a group of people who would not simply merge into Egypt's story, but who would live into their own story, their own freedom, their own culture, and would one day worship in a temple built on a very vulnerable hill, but filled with the presence of a powerful and trustworthy God. And so as we stand here on this rooftop overlooking the city of Jerusalem, despite our different concerns and situations, we all have one question to ask for ourselves. Do we believe that God is trustworthy? It's okay to struggle with this question, to doubt, to wrestle with God. That's what these rooftop moments are for. And I certainly did struggle with that question as I stood on the roof. But at some point, I had to let go of the railing. I had to walk down the stairs and into the decision to trust in God regardless of what lay ahead. For me, it looked like staying. For others, it looked like going. Trusting in God will bring different answers for different people. But the fruit of trusting in God is the same for everyone. Peace. It's the final line in our text. Peace be upon Israel. We can have peace inside even when chaos is raging outside. As Paul wrote to the Philippians, the peace of God surpasses all understanding, and it guards our hearts and our minds in Christ Jesus. As a JK intern, I've been given this opportunity to speak to you this morning, but I want you all to know that I've been learning from so many of you what it looks like to actually walk this whole trusting in God thing out in real life. I've seen this peace, the fruit of trust, on your faces, and in how you conduct yourselves in very difficult and painful situations. And it's your lives that preach far more than mere words ever could. And so you yourselves will know that peace does not necessarily flood our hearts and minds immediately on those rooftop decisions of life. More often, peace comes when we begin to act as though God can be trusted, when we walk into the choice to trust God, regardless of the answers we've been given or not given, regardless of how we might feel at the time. And so before we leave the roof this morning, Can we personally affirm that yes, God can be trusted? He is still worthy of our trust. And even when things seem completely out of control in our world and in our lives, he will always be worthy of our trust. Corrie ten Boom put it this way: never be afraid to trust an unknown future to a known God. A God who is for you and a God who surrounds you as the mountains surround Jerusalem. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, amen.